This is Back to Back.
Yo, what's up, Back to Backers? This is Willie Joy. Welcome to the show. This is Back to Back. This is my podcast. How are you? Hello. How you doing? Nice to see you. I hope everybody is having a good holiday week. I hope you are enjoying time with family or enjoying avoiding your family, whichever your preference is. You know, Thanksgiving, the most American of all holidays where we celebrate our ancestors showing up somewhere they didn't belong, claiming a bunch of stuff that already belonged to other people and being terrible to the people who are already there. I mean, it just doesn't get much more perfect than that for an American holiday. But that being said, I really do hope that everyone is having a good holiday, having a good little break. My guest is Gigi McGree, the Australian force of nature. Gigi McGree is on the show. She has a brand new track that is out right now called Tear You Apart with Aaron Gillespie from the band Under Oath. That just dropped. I talked to her a lot about that song because there was something about the energy of that song that really connected with me. So I was stoked to talk to her about making that song, her future plans. It sounds like she's got a lot more in that vein coming up. Gigi McGree also on tour. And I'm going to put a link in the description of this episode, of course, where you can go follow her, get all the tour dates, get all the new music. You will also find a couple other links, a link to the Back to Back Discord. You got to come join the Discord, y'all. I'm in there all the time when I am not streaming on Twitch. And also you can find the link to my Twitch right there in the description, twitch.tv/WillieJoy. But anytime I am not there, I am hanging in the Discord. If you're a music producer, that is where you go to send me your music. I will play your music live on stream every single Friday, give you some feedback. You'll meet some other amazing producers. We've had some awesome collabs come out of just the Friday feedback streams that I've been doing on Twitch. And it's really rewarding to see artists actually connecting and working with each other and creating something that didn't exist until they just randomly linked up on my Twitch channel. But today is all about Gigi McGree. When I talked to her, she was out in LA, where she has lived for years, moved here from Australia. We talk about that whole journey, and she's a powerhouse, man. Amazing singer, amazing songwriter. The story of how she started singing is pretty legendary. If you don't already know it, I won't spoil it for you, but definitely keep listening. It's a wild story in this conversation. She's also an amazing songwriter, writing not only for herself, but also for a lot of artists that you may know and love. We talk a little bit about that process as well. She's a great DJ. We also spent some time in this conversation talking about the nostalgia of, you know, our old local scenes. We had never spoken before, never met, but plenty of mutual friends, and man, just talking to her was a treat. I'm excited for y'all to hear it. If you do enjoy it, of course, I would love to hear from you. I would love your support. The Back to Back community is why I've been able to do this show for, you know, getting close to 5 years here. And I couldn't be more thankful for all of y'all. I couldn't be more grateful and appreciative that you show up and we get to spend this time together every week. You know, the best way to support this show is, as always, just spreading the word, letting people know you're listening, recommending some of your favorite episodes, putting your friends onto it, letting your favorite artists know that you would love to see them appear. And of course, you can always tag me, tag the show at Willie Joy, at Back to Back Pod. I love y'all. I hope you love this episode. It is all yours. Let's get into it right now. This is me and Gigi McGree, Back to Back. Let's go. You were at KnotFest. How was that?
It was so fun. I mean, I went with my best friend. We're like, I'm in a group of like 15 best friends and we're like the only metalheads. And like, I haven't been to like a metal concert like that in forever. And I forget that like the crowd is very different from EDM. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I do like, know what you mean.
Yeah. And being two like smallish girls, it was a lot. But like, I mean, I love Slipknot so much. And we like, we're like right next to the mosh pit.
Yeah. They, did you go to a lot of metal shows as a kid? Slipknot was one. I saw Slipknot a bunch of times when I was a kid, and I was a big metalhead back then.
No, my family loves disco. So I went to Cher and Kylie Minogue okay. and like, what else? I went to like NXS. Where else did my mom take me? My parents used to take me to like a lot of plays as well when okay. I was a kid. Yeah, but I mean, I'm Australian, so it's like, you know, the concerts that we had are like growing up as a kid were like, I didn't really go to many of them. Like I went to like some like hip hop big ones, but like back when like Ja Rule and Ashanti were like the biggest things
right.
in the world.
Yeah. You know? Which is funny. It's a simpler time, right? When like Ja Rule was arguably the biggest rapper in the world.
I mean, I just feel like listening to, I mean, obviously like Kendrick's a fucking G, but like listening to like a lot of the new stuff on the radio now, or like not on the radio, I don't listen to the radio, but like on Spotify, I'm like, it all just sounds the fucking same. Like, you know what I mean?
It's interesting because I do know what you mean, but then for me, there's something about that style that kind of connects with me in the same way that metal connected with me, because a lot of it to me is about sort of the energy and the feel as opposed to, you know, obviously it's not necessarily about the super deep lyrics, but there's something about it. I don't know.
Kendrick's a poet.
Yo, absolutely. And yeah, that's to say nothing of Kendrick Lamar, who's a modern day genius. But there is something, I don't know, maybe like you're a DJ and you DJ a lot of different genres. We're talking about disco, we're talking about metal, all of that. I was just listening to your new tune with the dude from Under Oath, and which is great. And I want to talk about that. But I don't know, does it all connect in your brain? Because for me, I never understood why some people would, you know, say like, oh, I only listen to house music, or I only listen to metal, or I only listen to opera or whatever it is. Like to me, it was all kind of connected.
Yeah. I mean, I always feel like if you say you only listen to one thing, like you're just not getting enough of like everything else. Like I definitely have genre preferences that I like to listen to, but like in a day I can go from listening to like Story So Far to Acceptance to like Erykah Badu to like Britney Spears. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I feel like genres these days, especially being a DJ, like I don't think we ever define ourselves with a genre. Like I definitely am more bass heavy. Like I don't, but I play a little bit of bass house in my sets. And then I play like, you know, I always finish my sets with some big like pop hit.
Right.
So it's like, I don't know. Like, it's so funny. Like, I feel like people like that, they just, I think that they're trying to give themselves a definition.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, everybody's trying to fit into a group at a certain point, and I get it. I was there we all were at a certain point.
Yeah.
Well, it makes me wonder. And first of all, I didn't mean to just jump into this. For you know, hello, it's nice to have you on the podcast.
But we're just like, let's talk.
Yeah, no, it kind of worked out great. I was just excited to talk about Slipknot, but
yeah,
absolutely. And we can talk more about them. But for you, I want to talk about you. Like, how do you, we're talking about, you know, how people define themselves and look to categorize themselves. And for me, if I'm trying to categorize you or say exactly what it is you do or what group you're a part of or what scene, it's hard to do. You're hard to pin down. Do you see yourself as part of any particular scene or group? I mean, outside of obviously DJ, singer, you know, that kind of thing.
EDM, when people are like, what do you spin, or like, what do you produce, or what are you saying? I'm just like, EDM, because like that in itself is so broad. It's literally dance music.
Yeah.
Which like to me, disco goes under, metal goes under, anything goes under, you know, it's an electronic, but like, I don't know, for me, I just, when people are like, so what do you play? Or like, what do you do? I'm like, I just do EDM. They're like, but what's up? And I'm like, kind of everything.
Right.
Just whatever I'm feeling, you know, like I definitely play for myself because I only play songs that I love and that I fuck with. And I think that that's why, like when I play, like I have so much energy and I have such a great time because I'm like, oh my God, I get like sometimes you'll see me when I'm like mixing and I'm so excited to play the next song that I'm just standing there like a weirdo smiling. You know, like I'm like, oh, they don't know. I'm so excited.
Isn't that the best feeling? Yeah. When you know what's coming and no one else does. And yeah.
And I'm just like, just wait for it. Trust me. And then I'm like looking at the other song because I have like chronic ADHD and I'm like, be patient. Don't do it yet. Give it at least 30 seconds.
That's good though. That sounds like when you're performing, you're in the moment a lot. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, completely. Yeah. I always have like a pre-ish planned out set, but the amount of times that I am like, oh, I want to do play this now, or I'm going to move this, or I'm going to do that. Like I always have like, you know, like a basic structure of what I'm going to do, but then I get excited and I just kind of go for what I feel is right.
Yeah. Well, and you started as a DJ, right? Like you were DJing locally out in Sydney for a long time before you sort of became the Gigi McGree that you are now, right?
Yeah, it was like, I used to DJ at this pub for like $25 an hour. Nice. And then I was at university at the time. And then I started throwing these like mega fucking raves at my university. And then I was like, oh, I'm just going to start like putting myself on as the opener. And then it was kind of like the whole thing happened really fast. Like I finished uni. And then I was like, I don't want to do that anymore. And then I was like, I think I want to DJ. And then I started doing like the club circuit in Australia. And then I did a tour with Nightmare. And he was like, do you sing? And I was like, yeah. Never sung before in my life. And he's like, cool, send me some stuff. And
why did he even ask you if you sung, if you didn't, or if he didn't know?
He was just like, so what's up with you? Like, do you sing? Like, do you produce? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, I can do all of it. I'm the kind of the person that it's like, if someone's like, can you do this? I'm like, maybe not right now, but give me like a bit of time and I can.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you always been that way to just sort of like say yes to the opportunity and then figure it out later?
Yeah. It gets me into some very strange places. Like I got asked to do a documentary with Vice on like the underground party scene in Paris. I'd never interviewed people. I'd never really been on camera. I'd never really done anything like that. And I was like, absolutely, I can do that. And I got there and I was like, so I'm in Paris with the whole Vice team and this is a lot of pressure. But it went great. And they asked me to come back and do another
one.
Oh,
that's awesome. Did you have some connection to Paris? Why Paris?
I don't know. That's just where they said they were going to do the first episode. And I was like, sick, let's do it. And like one of my friends was the DP on like on the shoot. And like, he was just like, you're crushing this. Like, he's like, you don't really have like, you're kind of pretty fearless. And I'm like, yeah, I think that I know that about myself. Like I'll kind of just do things until like, I'm like, oh, this is dangerous. Or like, this doesn't feel good. And then I'll stop. But until then, like, I kind of just do a lot. Mm.
Yeah. I mean,
is that that? In the background.
Oh, yeah, he's in there.
I have a cat too.
Amazing. Yeah, we'll see how much this guy interrupts this conversation. He's
sorry.
Oh, no, I'm please. Like, I'm glad you even let me know he was back in the room because, yeah, he can be a little disruptive.
I live with my best friend. She's also a DJ. She goes by the name of Miha, and she has a cat called Belle. And like, we'll lose her. Like she'll get like, you know, what cats do, they get into things. And I'm like, I don't know where Bao is, but I know she's watching us somewhere and she'll be like in the wardrobe. Like, yeah. That's just so bizarre.
They're so fascinating. Yeah. And they're always monitoring you. That's absolutely true.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know where she is, but I know she's watching. Yeah.
Well, I mean, cats are fascinating to me because I'm very much a cat person, but you know, they've been domesticated so much shorter of a time than dogs. So they're so much closer to like their wild ancestors. And that's like so much of the weird behavior is just.
That's so strange. Yeah. This is the first cat that I've had.
Very nice.
Yeah. So I'm like still getting to learn.
Right.
Her.
Yeah.
I love it now. We're
not. Yeah. Hey, why not? We can talk about whatever we want. But no, that's awesome. I saw on your social media that you were living with Miha now too. I love her, man. She's great.
Yeah. We are like pretty insane living together. Like we wake up, we play this game where we wake up and we have Sonos throughout the house, and our alarm has, we put the Veronicas on. And it's like, when you hear like the opening chords, oh fuck, what's this? I can't remember what the song's called, but it's like the,
oh,
I feel so untouched.
Yeah,
you know that song? So we'll wake each other up in the morning, and I'm like, it'll be like 9:30. I'm like, Amber's not awake yet. I need to wake her up, and I'll just put that on. And she's like, morning, Gigi.
That's amazing. How did you two meet and become friends?
Just through like the DJ circuit. Like we met originally the first time in Mexico, and like we just like kind of got like attached at the hip, and then we would just see each other out more and more and more. And then through the pandemic, we got so close, so close. And then it was just like, I was living with my other best friend at the time, and she's just bought a new house. So I moved in with Amber, because I was just like, okay, it's time to like live with a new bestie.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, she's great. Do you think you connect with her not only on a friend level, but kind of on an artistic level? I feel like her artistic journey has been kind of parallel in that, you know, she's sort of had a few different identities as Miha, gone through a bunch of different like stages of the Miha project. All very cool, yeah, but all very different.
Yeah, we love, like, we have a project together that we're actually doing. It's called So Tough, So Cute. And it's like angsty girl punk style.
Nice.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. So we love like that, like we'll drive in the mornings and listen to like, what were we listening to? Oh, I can't remember the name of the band, but we'll listen to like No Doubt or like Hole and like scream at the top of our lungs.
I love that.
Yeah, like, she's awesome. She's just so easy to live with too, because we're always on the same page. We don't really like go out that much, so we're always like movie night.
Yeah, exactly. That's the funniest. I tell people that all the time. The secret of DJs is that like DJs just don't leave their house, you know?
It's, people are like, yo, like your life must be crazy. And I'm like, yeah, when I'm not touring, I'm at home. Like yesterday, like I was actually supposed to play a show in Tuscan, but my flight got canceled. So it was the first show I've ever missed.
Oh, wow.
So
just yesterday, the first show you ever missed? Wow.
Yeah. It was so sad. I was like in the Uber and I started crying, and I was like, why am I so emotional over this? Because people were texting me, or like DMing me, and they're like, we're so upset. And I'm like, you're upset? How do you think I feel?
Right.
Like, love to do.
Yeah, that's so frustrating.
But like, I came home, and then Sunday we woke up and we like started gardening. And I'm like, this is what DJs do, like, or producers do. Like, we do home stuff because we're not home enough.
Yeah. No, it's, I love DJs being domestic.
Yeah. Oh yeah. At my old crib, we had like an avocado tree, an orange tree, lemon and lime trees. And I would just go outside with my basket and pick all my fruit. And everyone's like, you're so different to like your like persona that you put out. They're like, you're actually like this sweet little wholesome girl.
Right.
And I'm like, don't I put out that persona? And they're like,
That's really funny. I think it's important for balance though. And that, I mean, I wanted to talk to you about that too, because I think you do have a public persona of, you know, this like these wild videos, and you're making, you know, even like the new song with Aaron Gillespie, you know, it's like this screaming punk, like electro punk kind of thing. How do you balance that with also just being a regular person and having a regular life? Because I feel like when people have a perception of you as sort of like a wild public persona, it comes with weird expectations from people.
Yeah. I mean, I am pretty hyperactive 24/7. Like there's not much that I'm ever really like, unless I'm like on the couch and I'm watching a movie, but even then I'm usually playing some game on my phone or like shopping or like doing something. But I think like I'm really big on routine. So like for me, like because I have really bad ADHD, like I work out every morning to like exert and click my brain into gear. Yeah. And then, you know, you just like, I set myself, like I have a weekly planner and I like write down what I need to get done and like, you know, what sessions I'm doing and everything like that. And I'm like, just very big on planning so that like no time is wasted. And I also allocate time for myself. Mm,
Yeah, that's you great. Know? I think that's so important to actually build that into your day.
Oh, yeah. It's just like people forget that, like, you can do so much, but like when you run on empty or when you're like exhausted, like if you don't take a beat, like nothing good's going to come from it. So like, I'm very big on like, I mean, I like am a low key grandma. Like I'm in bed at like 9:30, nice. 10.
That's great.
Everyone laughs at me. They're like, so yeah, you're the wild one. And are you in bed, Gigi? And I'm like, it's 10:30, guys. You know, I'm
yeah,
in
be
bed.
Quiet. I'm trying to sleep.
Come on. No, I'm watching a psychological thriller right now. Nice.
I mean, did you have you had those points in your career, especially maybe, you know, when the hype is going crazy or when you're on some big tour, have you reached that burnout point? Have you gotten overwhelmed with it?
Yeah, I did a bus tour for 3 months and on the last show I had a panic attack. And it was just like, I'm like a super light sleeper. So when things move, I wake up a lot. So I was just like, you know, on not a lot of sleep, shows every night. We did 6 shows a night for 3 months. And it was just like, I got to the end and I was just like, I woke up in the middle of the night and I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And I went out, so I couldn't move for like an hour. And then I finally banged on like the person that was sleeping up above me. And I was like, help me.
Oh, wow.
And they were like, what's going on? And I was like, I don't know. Like, and I just lied on the bus floor. And then I had to do a show that night and I was like shaking. And then I went to the doctors when I got home and he was like, yeah, you suffered from a severe panic attack.
Oh, wow.
And I was on meds for like,
that's,
it was not fun. I've never had anything like that happen before because like, as I say, like I'm even like at festivals, like I kind of like just go do my show, hang out for a bit. And then I go back to my hotel. Like, I don't really, you know, I know that sleep is really important and rest is really important. So I make sure that like, if I'm doing, you know, over the Halloween period, I had 5 shows in a row. Like I didn't drink that weekend. Every night I was back. Like I would stay for an hour after my set and then I was back in my hotel. Right.
Yeah. It's smart. It's really smart. And the bus story too. I mean, that makes sense. Cause I think the bus tours, especially it's like this little bubble you live in for however long the tour is. And it's really easy to kind of lose a sense of reality or normalcy.
Yeah, you're in a new place every single day. Like you go, you wake up, you're in a new place. And I would like go and work out and then I would eat and then I would work on music and then I would do a show and then I would go to bed. And it's like, and that happens every day. And then, you know, sometimes like I don't eat meat and I'm like lactose intolerant and I'm gluten sensitive. Yeah. So for me, like eating on the road is really hard too, because like, especially when you're in like the Midwest and it's like, everything is just steaks.
Yeah.
And
as
like,
far as the eye can see. Yeah.
I ate so many French fries. My God. Like I would literally be like, we're going to McDonald's again. And I'd be like, are you kidding me? And they'll be like, Gigi wants a large French fries. I'd be like, okay.
Yep.
You know,
yep. it's tough. And then, you know, all of it goes into how you feel at the end of the day, right? If you're eating bad food, yeah. If you're low on sleep, it all adds up for sure.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're like this too, but I'm the way where I can kind of, for a short amount of time, at least I can push down whatever is bothering me. I can kind of gut through it, get, you know, do the show, get on the bus, whatever it is. But yeah, if you go for too long, man, I think the body eventually is like, hey, stop it.
Yeah. Stop. Be nice to me. Give me some love. You know, yeah, it's like, it's just, yeah, balance is so important, but I'm really good at it. Like I do pride myself in it. You know, even Amber's like, Miha's like, you know, like she's like, that's one thing that I've learned from you this like past year. She's like, you balance really well. And like, I think that because I've always implemented that, like I can push the boundaries pretty hard as to when I, like, that's the only time I've ever had that happen.
Right. And then you correct afterwards. Yeah. It makes total sense. And I feel like if you've been DJing for a long time too, like when did you start DJing? How old were you?
I think when I first started playing at like pubs, I was like 19.
So you've been in it for a minute. So I feel like that's...
Yeah, I started on vinyl.
Yeah, nice. I did. I started on vinyl too.
And then I went to
CDs. Yeah, back when you used...
No, I did that whole thing.
Back when you used CDJs to play CDs, yeah.
Oh my God. And I would write the names of the songs on the CDs. And if my CD was scratched, oh, big
problems.
Oh
yeah. That was the worst. That was the worst.
And it would just skip and you'd be like, why? This is my favorite CD. Yeah,
exactly. In the middle of, you know, what's supposed to be the biggest song of the night and you don't have another copy. All of that is, I don't know.
Oh my God. And carrying on with that big CD folder. Oh my God. With my big DJ bag, like, whoa.
All of that is insane. I once my car got broken into and they stole the CD wallet and it was, you know, that felt like losing your entire life. It was a different time.
Yeah, I've had that. I had like a really bad taxi experience where I was playing at a club in Australia called Chinese Laundry. I was like in a taxi on the way there and the taxi driver like tried to put his hand up my skirt and essentially like I jumped out of the taxi I was moving and he drove off with like all my gear.
Jesus Christ.
And I remember getting down to Chinese Laundry. My friend Paul, who I think he still does stuff there. Paul has a party. He was like, you okay? And I was like,
of course. I mean, yeah.
Guys found me and they like chased after the taxi and they're like, you okay? And I was like, what just happened?
Man, I'm so sorry that happened. That's terrifying.
Yeah, that's scary. The world is a scary place. People are crazy.
Yes, 100%. Yes. It's only getting crazier, it seems like. But I mean, what was the, you know, speaking of, you know, going to the home base club and seeing the home crew there, what was the scene in Sydney like when you were coming up? Were you a part of that whole crew of, you know, What's So Not and Alice in Wonderland and all them who were kind of running around at a certain point in the Bloghouse years?
I was more in with like, there were these DJs called like Ajax and Bang Gang and Sneaky Sound System and like Anna Luno and like Benny. Yep. That was my crew that I used to hang out with. And then like Flight Facilities, Jimmy, we had another alias called Jimmy Two Socks. Like I was in that world more. But like, I mean, it was so different back then because like that's when like electro, that like hard electro house was like popping. And that's what made me first fall in love with like, with music because like I loved like Techie LaTeX like, you know, Cut Copy and like all that old stuff, like that stuff to me just hits like, and Panel and like, God, there's so many. But yeah, that's the kind of scene that I was kind of rolling with, which was like way more like, I feel like intensely party.
I wanted to add, what's the difference between, just because I'm curious in a nerdy way, because I, you know, I've talked to Anna and to What's So Not and a bunch of people about the Sydney scene in those days. What was the division between the one you were in and the one I was talking about? Was it just different music?
I think it was like, we were like it was different music, but we all were like a big family. So it was like a big, like, I don't know, the community was really strong. And I don't know, like, I never even saw Alex out really, or like, nor with Chris. Yeah. Like, it was just a different scene. Like, he was more with like, you know, back when him and Flume did their project together, like it was just a totally different scene. Like I would go to more of like the ravey style clubs than like the trap.
Sure. Was it all happening in like the King's Cross area or was it a little more spread out? Okay.
Yeah, it was that. I mean, that was where all the clubs were. And like, there was this one club called Hugo's and they did like a thing called Sneaky Sound System Sundays. And I went every single Sunday.
I miss that, man.
Like Mondays were non-existent.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, in Chicago where I came up, there was a thing on Mondays called Rehab Mondays. And it was the same thing. Like Tuesdays were just a wreck for, you know, years of my life.
You just like, yeah, when you love something, like I would... And then I started like at one point I was like working the door there, like doing the cash because like my friend owned the club and he was like, I trust you. Like, can you like, you know, do the cash? And I was like, yeah. And then I would like, and then he was like, if you do this for me for like a couple of times, he's like, you can DJ here. And I was like, okay. And then I started DJing before the boys. And then like after that, they would always just put me as an opener on their shows.
That's great. I mean, I really do miss those. I don't feel like that kind of scene exists anymore.
It doesn't. And it's so sad. like, I don't know if it ever will. It's like the same with disco. Like once it, you know, like there is disco out there for sure. But like, I don't know. I feel like that's just that time of the world, like in our lives. And it's not, I don't know. Like, yeah. I wish it came back, but I don't know if it would feel the same.
That's the thing, right? I don't know exactly what you just said. I don't know if it would feel the same. I mean, even thinking about disco, there's plenty of people who have tried to sort of revive disco or do a faithful version. I mean, even some of like recent, you know, Daft Punk and like even Justice and all that, you can tell that they're really trying to like pay homage to disco, but it's, you know, it, because it's happening in a different era, maybe it just can't be the same, you know?
Yeah, I think we're past it. And I do really feel sorry for like this generation because we're just giving them EDM.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
This is what we got for you now. But I mean, I guess they feel the same way about EDM that we felt this, like the same way back then about disco or about like, I don't even know what I would call that genre. It was like, it was super hard, like house.
I kind of know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's like that whole blog house era was a magical time. I mean, even to bring it back to you for a second, the new song, Tear You Apart with Aaron Gillespie, to me, listening to that, I was like, oh, this feels like old, like dim mock, like electro house, like old Bloody Beetroots. Like I hadn't heard something like that in a long time.
I mean, I'm just trying to do stuff, you know, as I was saying, like, that's where I fell in love with music. So for me, like, I'm trying to do stuff that at the core is why I loved it. And, you know, like, I'm a metalhead. I love punk music. That's the style of music that I always fell in love with. So I was like, okay, there's a way to make it all work together. And like, with that song, like, me and Aaron wrote that song in 30 minutes. Like, it was so fast. And he was like, what do you want to, he was like, I was like, I have a concept. And we just started talking. And then I just went into the mic and like said, I want to tear you apart. And that was the hook straight away. And like, it just, the whole flow of the song, like we pretty much had that song wrapped in 2 weeks.
Nice. I mean, I think that's usually the sign that you're on the right track, right? Like when it comes together that quickly, that's how all the good songs are made.
Yeah. And like, I actually have a collaboration coming out with the Bloody Beetroots.
Oh, amazing.
Because like, you know, I feel like the more that people listen to like the tone of my voice and where I'm trying to go with it and also like the production and everything, like people like him and like I'm also doing one with Slander as well because they do that like beautiful, big melodic, you know, I love you type shit. And like my voice sits in that role really nicely too. And I've got another one with Seven Lions. So yeah, I feel like the more and more people hear me and what I'm trying to do, they're like, oh, we know what's perfect for you, which feels really nice because I'm like, cool, I'm actually doing something that like I'm identifying myself with a genre or like...
Or an aesthetic or a perspective.
Totally.
Yeah, and that's great. I mean, I think I talk a lot on here about, you know, producers finding their own voice and like a sonic signature and how that's, you know, a hard thing to do that can take a long time. But it's interesting just because I don't talk to as many singers as well to think about that from a singing perspective. Because in the same way that, you know, you can sit down in front of Ableton and make literally any sound you want, a singer, I mean, if you got a singing voice, that's still, you could kind of do anything you want with that, right?
I've learned how to manipulate my voice to the core. Like, and I know what people like, you know, when I get offered to do top lines for people, I know what they want. So I can give them like a pretty airy, fairy light, like, you know, with like Zed's Dead, like they love the light, like a little bit of angsty, but like with the Bloody Beetroots, it's like screamo. Yeah. And I've learned how to, you know, through vocal training, I've learned how to do that too. So it's like where like my voice cracks out and breaks and does all those cool little tricks. And it's just like playing an instrument, you know, like your voice is an instrument.
Oh, yeah, it's an incredible instrument and such a complex instrument too. I mean, that's...
It's so cool that I like didn't know that I could sing and then all of a sudden I started and I was like, people like this. This is cool. I like this. I sound okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's really interesting that story about Nightmare asking you to sing when you had never really sung before and then you sort of just jumping into it and being on a big release really quickly.
The first song that I ever sang and wrote was Frontlines.
Yeah, which is a big song. Like that was a big tune.
I had no idea. Like I was like, he was like, do you mind if Zed's Dead collabs on it? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, let's fucking go. And then that song blew up and I was like, oh, okay.
Did you
and then
afterwards?
I was like, wait, I'm not prepared for this.
You're right. Well, that was my question. What happens afterwards? Did you end up like having formal training after that? Or did you just sort of figure it out?
I only started getting vocal training when I wanted to learn how to do screamo, because that is such a strain on your voice. And to be able to do that at shows and run and dance and do the whole entertainment thing, you have to be able to protect
right.
it. But yeah, no, I haven't had vocal training ever. Don't hate me, people.
No, that's amazing. I mean, it's probably a part of why I think you have such an identifiable style, right?
Yeah, and I say words very strangely when I sing. Like, you know, like I don't pronounce things as I, you know, like even like, I don't know, like I'll hear words that I sing back and I'm like, why am I saying like bodies or something else? And I'm like, why do, and that I can't unsing it like that. It's so weird.
Yeah. That's really interesting too. Just like what comes out creatively, because it's not like it's a conscious choice to sing it that way. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, I mean, for me, like the writing process is like, I'll go in, I'll take my guitar, I'll like fuck around with some chords. I'll be like, oh, this feels good. And then I'll like record that. And then I'll get on the mic and I'll start doing melody riffs. And like usually words come out. And then I'll be like, okay, I'm piecing this song together now.
Interesting. And how is it with you, you know, collaborating with a bunch of different producers? I mean, you were just throwing out a bunch of collabs you've got coming up. What is that process, you know, depending on who you're working with, adjusting to their creative process, still maintaining your creative identity? Is that something you've gotten better at over time, do you think?
It's always been really easy for me. I usually give them like a top line with a guitar. And then I'll be like, I'll send them examples. This is how I hear it going. Like when we did Save My Grave with Zed's Dead, it was originally a house track.
Okay.
And Zach sent it back to me and I was like, no. And he was like, what do you mean no? And I was like, it has to be like Eyes on Fire. And he was like, gotcha. And then he sent me back Save My Grave.
Nice.
And I was like, yeah, you're welcome.
That's DJ brain too, though, right? Is sometimes you can just hear what context you should be in for a given, you know, yeah.
Well, for me, I'm just like, I know how that song has made me feel, like Eyes on Fire. And I'm like, so I know how with what I've written, it can also make me feel as well. And I just feel like they would make me feel similar. And I was like, that's why I think it should sound like that. And he's like, you're actually really right. And he was like, cool, give me a beat. And then
I love that. I love that. Well, and it's cool that you're able to do that too. Cause I think I'm friends with singers, like just straight singers in EDM. And I think so often singers, especially singers who don't DJ and are pure, you know, just amazing vocal talents. A lot of times singers get treated like second class citizens in dance music.
Oh, yeah.
Which is very weird to me.
It's the same as like, you know, I do writing sessions too. And sometimes, you know, I'll go into like a room with like Selena Gomez's team and like, I don't know. It's always so weird because like, you're kind of giving someone a piece of you when you write something. And then I'm always like, you know, I'll hear her sing it back and I'll be like, it's not supposed to sound like that.
Right.
You know, like, and then I'll be like, I don't want them to have this song. Cause I'm like, for me, it's my art. It's what I do. It's what I love. And if it doesn't feel good, I don't want to be involved.
Yeah,
in it.
That makes sense. I mean, is that a specific situation that's happened? Like, what do you do in that situation?
I generally will listen back and then just tell my team that I don't like it and then they can handle it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm really dominant about what I like and what I don't like. And I don't ever be like, oh, maybe. I'm like, you know, for things like that, you can make a lot of money. But at the end of the day, like I would rather feel good about something than be like, oh, I did that.
Yeah, I mean, that makes perfect sense. And again, I think it's great that you can be that decisive. I think it's very easy for people to get into a situation like that, or really any situation where you're working with somebody else and just want to, you know, you want, at least for me, like I want to make the people I work with happy. I want to, to, you know, encourage whatever. And so some, I've definitely, especially early in my career, been in those situations where I'm just like, yeah, great. Where I'm in the back of my head being like, yeah, this is not what.
This doesn't feel good. Yeah. I don't know. My mom is like, you are so stubborn and so dominant. And she's like, and I love that about you, but sometimes I really want to hit you in the face. And I'm like, you brought me up like this.
I was going to say, have you always been like that since you were a kid?
Like I was into sports a lot when I was younger. Like I was like, you know, very good at skiing and very good at netball and in the swim team and in the track team and played soccer. And like, I actually got suspended from soccer because I used to get into so many fights because like if the ref would call something wrong, I would be up in his face. And then if he like was like, no, it's right, I would just get my fist and just.
Wow.
I feel very strongly. I've got very strong emotions.
I can see that. That's amazing. I mean, I have to imagine you got kicked out of some games then.
I got told not to come back. But like for me, it's like I also don't like being wrongly accused. Yeah. Like, you know, when people like say, you know, or if I'm like just not happy with how something is, like obviously now I'm not 13 and, you know, I'm matured a lot. But like, if it doesn't make me feel good, I don't want to do it. And like, you know, especially with music, it's a collaboration. Like I'm giving you something, you're giving me something, let's make something beautiful. And if it doesn't feel beautiful for both of us, like if another producer, and I haven't had this happen yet, but if they're like, oh, like, you know, like this is what whatever you sent me back, I don't like. Usually I'm like, okay, cool. Let me work on other stuff. And if I can't get anything else, I'm like, maybe this just isn't going to work. And they're usually like, cool.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's such a superpower too, is realizing when a song isn't the one, or when an idea isn't the one, and maybe it's just in the way of a better one, you know?
Yeah. I write like 5 songs a week. Like not every one is a smash. Like, you know, there's ones that I know that definitely stand out, but I'm like, it's a creative process. If every single song was a smash, like, you know, I'd be Ed Sheeran.
Right, exactly. That would be nice. Yeah.
That would be nice.
Well, what's, you know, so if you're writing 5 songs a week, how do you decide what song is used for what purpose? You know, like, is everything for Gigi McGree? Do you write, if you're collaborating with somebody, do you sort of intentionally write for that purpose, or do you just kind of see what comes out and then see where it fits afterwards?
I'll just like write, and then I'll be like, you know, like with the Slander song, like I wrote this song and I was thinking, I feel like this doesn't make sense for my project. So I'm like, who would love this? And then I was like, oh, the Slander Boys would love this. And I sent it to Derek and he was like, oh my God. And I was like, so you like it? And he's like, this is gorgeous. And I was like, okay. Same with like 7 Lions, you know, like I sent him a top line and I was like, I don't know if like this is your style. And he was like, oh my God. He was like, can we make like, I've written 4 songs with him.
Yeah, he's great.
So yeah. And I feel like as well, like once I get with an artist, like the same with Zed's Dead, like once I get with an artist that I really like and we really creatively flow together nicely, like I'll just consistently always send them stuff. Or they'll send me stuff and I'll write to it. But generally, like, I like to deliver top lines.
That makes sense. And I love, too, that you consistently work with people. I love artistic partnerships. I think it's so interesting to watch people work together over, like, a period of years and see how they can kind of evolve, like, whatever it is they have together, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, it's just like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, if it feels good, keep doing it. And I think as well, like, I have such a good connect, like, you know, me and the Zed's Dead Boys, we're like best friends. Like I've toured with them for 3 years now. Like, you know, like where they, I look at them like my brothers. So it's like, when you have that deep connection, like it's so easy to make music, because I'll send Zach stuff and he's like, no, I don't like this. And I don't get offended or I don't feel a type of way. I'm just like, cool, I'll hit you with another one.
Exactly. Yeah. That's,
you know, like,
how are you able? Cause I think that's yet another, I think we're dropping a lot of important points for aspiring artists here, but it's, you know, being able to take your ego out of it and not, you know, being hurt if somebody says, you know, I don't like this or this isn't the one. Have you always been able to do that?
I don't care. Like,
yeah,
that's okay. It's no sweat off my back. Like, you know, like I don't really have an ego when it comes to like, I don't really see myself having an ego. Like, I don't, you know, like things aren't right for everyone and that's okay. Like, and that's even with my music, like, it's not made for everyone. Some people won't like it and that's okay. I like it. And that's what matters.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean that you're absolutely right. But I think, aren't you surprised by how many people don't really seem to operate that way?
Mm-hmm. But that's just, I mean, it's so bizarre because I feel like as soon as people see like a slight rise in their career or whatever it is, like the click in them changes and they're like, ooh, I'm like,
yeah,
you know,
popping.
I'm vibing now, like I'm popping. And it's like, be humble, bitch. Like you're at the bottom, like, and you're successful now and congratulations on your success. But like, you know, and that's the thing I do love about the EDM community. Like, so many people are so humble, like, and I'm friends with like, you know, like the coolest thing is going to a festival and you get to literally hang out with like 30 of your friends and we all just mob in a big group together. And it's so fun. And like, I feel like I'm kind of recognized as like one of the boys because I have such a playful, like boisterous energy. And like, that's always been something that I find so cool because the boys will be like, you know, like, oh yeah, Gigi's coming with us, you know, right. Like, I don't know. It's really cool. Like, there's some people that are really like standoffish and don't want to talk to people and don't really want to have like that community sense. But for me, like in the beginning of my career, like I've always had that, like, you know, going back to like when I was telling you about like the scene that I like kind of first started DJing in, like that was a community. And then, you know, touring with Zed's Dead, that was a community. So it's always been about community.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, that's, I talk about that on this podcast all the time that it really does all come back to community. I think it's the only way you can sort of sustain a long career and be satisfied and like do some, yeah, all of that is like, it's sort of meaningless if you're not doing it with a community as part of a community.
Not fun.
Yeah.
I love going like, you know, like you go to like Holy Ship and like you wake up in the morning and you're like all going down to breakfast together and you're all hanging out. And like, you know, you go back to people's rooms and you watch TV and like you make up dance routines or whatever you want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Fun.
Well, you strike me. Do you think of yourself as an extrovert? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Just checking. Because yeah, you very much strike me as an extrovert. And I think for extroverted people, of which I'm definitely an introvert, but you know, for extroverted people, it's like, you got to be around people, right?
I like being alone. It's boring.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. My manager was like, when I was moving out, he's like, are you going to move in alone or with someone? And I was like, I'm never living alone. That shit's boring. I don't want to wake up by myself and be like, what are we doing today, right. Gigi? I want to come and be like, Amber, what you want for breakfast? Right.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And I think, yeah, finding that kind of community through music is it's a really beautiful thing. What was the point? If we go back, you know, we were talking about your parents and playing disco and you DJing at the pub and all of that. What was the moment when it changed from, you know, like a fun thing, a thing with friends to a more serious thing?
I think, so I'm good friends with Rita Ora and she was doing a tour around Australia and she was like, do you want to come and be my DJ? And I was like, yeah, for sure. And like at this point, I'd only been DJing at pubs.
Right.
And she was
another
like,
example
cool.
of you just saying yes and figuring it out. Yeah.
She was like, you know, we've been friends for like, I think like 10 years now. And she was like, I want to have you on the road with me. And I was like, okay, cool. Let's do it. And then after playing in front of like, even though they were like, you know, young girls, it was so much fun. And then I realized that like when I'm performing or when I'm on stage, I feel free. I don't restrict myself in any way. Like, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen me play, but I do the weirdest shit. Like I'm like hopping like a bunny or like I'm fucking,
yeah.
You know, like I don't know what
no,
I'm doing. And then
sets.
I watch.
Yeah.
I'm a psycho, but I completely black out when I'm performing. And I feel like that for me feels like such a euphoric state that like, I like chase that forever.
I relate strongly to what you're talking about. Actually, I'm the same in like, I'm a spaz when I'm DJing very much so. And I think what I've figured out for me, you tell me if you feel the same, but for me, what I've after many years of DJing, I was like, I think this is like, you're right that it feels free, but I almost feel like it's more me than like the regular me, you know, like I'm like, oh, this is who I actually am.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like as well, like, I don't know, like I love being in the spotlight. Like if there's a camera around, I'm like, oh, what's good? What are we doing? You know, like I've been that way. Like my mom put me in like theater as a kid. Like, you know, I used to make her watch, like walk around and film me with a camera and I'd be like, this is our reality TV show. You know, when I was like 5 years old.
Where does that come from, do you think?
My dad is an extreme extrovert and he would like, we still do it to this day. Like we'll be in the supermarket and my dad will put like a song on and he'll be like, you know what time it is? I'm like, it's dance break time. And we're just dancing in the supermarket. You know, my parents have always kind of just been like, they've never pressured me to do anything. They've just been like, whatever makes you happy, you do that.
Were they musical?
No.
Interesting.
My dad owns nightclubs in Australia back in King's Cross. So like that was my big connection to DJing, like starting to get into that circuit because he would just like make me do like the early slots. And then they were like, let's book Gigi at the headline slots. And I was like,
wait, what clubs did he own?
He owns one called Trademark.
Okay.
And then he owned one called Lady Lux.
Okay.
And then one called Dragonfly.
All right. All right. Did he DJ at all?
He would like, I like had his set up in our like living room and he would be like, can you DJ so I can like, you know, dance and I'm going to have some friends over. And I'd be like, yeah, of course I'll DJ.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And it was all disco?
All disco.
I love that.
All disco. Yeah, it was so fun. And then I started playing like more trap music when I figured out that I really like trap. And then from trap, I figured out that I love dubstep. And then, you know, it all kind of flowed from
there. Yeah, absolutely. And then did you, I know you've done production as well. When did that come into your life?
I would say probably like 4 years ago, I like obviously needed to learn how to record my own vocals.
Sure.
And then I was like, okay, it's time. I don't ever pride myself on being a fantastic producer. I'm a great songwriter, but like producing for me, it takes me a little bit longer than it would to like, it just takes me time. It takes me a lot of time. And like, you know, I like to work with like engineers so I can be like, oh, put this kick here, do this here, do that. Like, you know, I kind of Kanye on it.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I think even just knowing how to engineer your own vocals is a huge leg up. Cause that's, I don't think people understand. I mean, yeah, it's fun, but it's also so important. And there's so many, like engineering vocals is a skill unto itself, you know?
Singing and then having my hand on the thing like this. I'm like, cool, we're done. Cool. And I'm like, okay, let's go through all these babies and hear what actually sounds decent.
Yeah, of course. It's interesting, starting on vinyl, going through the actual CD days into the digital era. Whenever I talk to somebody, just because I also started on vinyl, is there anything you miss from the early days of DJing? Like when it was a little more innocent and a little more kind of just like physical, right? Like you're physically putting a record on the turntable. Is there any part of that you miss now?
I think the thing that I struggle with a little bit is when you see like the TikTokers DJing and like, if they want to be a DJ and a producer, go forth. But if they're just doing it because it's like, oh, this is a cash grab and I've got a following, like that's the only thing that I'm like, oh, that's not fair because there's so many kids that are out there like learning Ableton and really giving it a shot. And, you know, like that's, I think back then when you actually had to physically put a record on the turntable and you actually had to like use your ears to beat match everything.
Oh, you know what I mean? Like it was $10 to buy that record, which had one song on it.
And you would roll around with your gigantic record bag, carrying that shit up downstairs. Yeah. Like, you know, I think that
it was a commitment for me. Yeah.
You know, you wanted to do it, so you did it. And also like the equipment back then was so expensive. It is still as expensive now, but like, you know, like I would carry like 5 needles with me just in case one didn't work, you know, like just little things.
Everything's breaking all the time. And you also, there wasn't such an example of like, I could make $1 million with this, right?
No, you're literally just like, this is fun.
Yeah, there's like, yeah, the idea of like that celebrity DJ, it didn't exist at a certain point, you know?
It fully did not. And then all of a sudden, you know, fast forward, we're in 2021 now. It's like, you know, like I'm an Instagram model or I'm just, you know, whatever, like I can be a DJ too. And that's also okay. Like I do appreciate that, that 100%. That does happen because, you know, if they want to do that, that everyone should do what they want. But I just think that like, there is that level of like, we did a lot to get here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it makes me think about something you said earlier when we were talking about, you know, this like deep culture, this deep, rich history of disco and other kinds of like older styles of music. And then you were saying, yeah, all we got is EDM, right? Which is funny, but it really, I've been thinking about it in the back of my head, this whole conversation, because it's something I think about a lot of the modern EDM culture in 2021. It's so beautiful and so amazing in so many ways. But then there's like this lack of depth to a lot of it. And I want to be careful that I'm not being too critical because I like pop music. I like stupid bangers. I like all of that kind of stuff. But I do.
Calvin Harris, any day.
Yeah, 100%. But I do wonder, like, you know, as the creators, as people who are actively involved, like, obviously you care about this. We're talking about the commitment it takes to get involved in it. Like, is that something you think about in terms of culturally, like, how do we make sure this maintains its sense of self, has meaning at the end of the day?
I think that like it shows through your work, you know, and for me, like, you know, I feel like when I'm up there and I'm performing, like how bad I love it and how much I want it, you see it. And I feel like that's all I can kind of do. Cause you know, like I get so many DMs from people being like, your set made me so happy. Like your energy, like I was having a really bad day, blah, blah, blah. And for me, that's like, that's probably like, obviously I do it because I love it, but like getting those types of messages, I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. And I think that like, I think we just roll and let it go where it's going to go because like the people that are doing it for the wrong reasons, they don't do it for long. When you are obsessed with it, when it's ingrained with you, when you live and breathe it, you'll do it. You know, I hope to do it until I'm like 80.
100%. Yeah.
That grandma bitch being like, yeah. I don't know. I think that like everything is fatty these days, you know, like fads go so fast. Like, you know, we're on TikTok now. We watch 15-second videos and that's how short our attention spans are to social media.
And it's like, happening to genres, you know, too, right?
Yeah, totally. It's like, you know, I feel like even with dubstep, like rhythm is so oversaturated now too. It's like, you know, I don't know. It gets a lot, but like something new always pops up. And, you know, I just hope that one day I'm at the forefront of whatever's new.
Yeah, I think that's a great attitude to have. I mean, it makes me wonder, where are you at musically right now? What are you, do you have a vision for, you know, the final form of Gigi McGree, the next step, whatever it is?
I definitely like, I know what I want and I know what I want to be portrayed as and I know what my music to sound like. I'm definitely going with that whole electronic punk sound, metal sound, because that's what I love. And I feel like those two just cross over so much. I don't think I ever have an end vision because like, I don't know, like you just don't know, but
because you're gonna be doing it when you're 70, out. Right? It's
like, yeah, you know, you never know. Like one day I could wake up and be like, you know, I've got so many other non-musical related projects that I'm working on as well. So that's really exciting. And you know, I don't know where I'm gonna go or where I'm gonna be, but I know it's gonna be fantastic.
What other projects? Anything you wanna talk about?
I don't know if I can. She's gonna be in a movie. Ooh, screen.
Okay, there we go. That's all we need. Because, yeah, it's just interesting, the electronic punk thing, to go back to that. While I was listening to Tear You Apart, what I liked about it, other than the fact that it did kind of give me that nostalgia of the electropunk era, which was so special, it didn't feel forced at all. Like there's so much dubstep now, the dubstep metal crossover. And I get why there is so much dubstep metal crossover, but I'm kind of over a lot of it because to me, a lot of it kind of feels like, oh, just like you wrote a metal song and then you kind of chunked a dubstep drop in the middle of it. And
yeah, I hear it all the time. And I'm like, you know, you have this really cool build up and, you know, you use a ton of guitars and make it chuggy and then it goes into and you're like, this, what? Yeah. Like, you can't do that. Like, I get, you know, like, but I'm like, that's okay. Like, that song won't connect.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. We're all right. Exactly.
But for me, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, other people may like it. I'm not, you know, I'm just, for me, I'm kind of over. I feel like there's a certain template that a lot of people are following right now to combine dubstep and metal. It's like, there's kind of only one way to do it. And with you, Tear You Apart, to me, I was like, oh, this is great. This feels new and fresh. And I would love, have you been playing that out? How does that go down?
Yeah, it goes great. It's also so hard as well, because, you know, like I make songs and then I'm like, okay, this has to go in a DJ set. How is this going to work? And then, you know, it can be hard sometimes because I have so many beautiful songs. Like I have a song called Freak, which has got Remington Leith on it. He's the lead singer of that band Palo Royale. And it is such a beautiful song, but it's like a Nirvana song and it's slow and it's like gorgeous. And I'm like, edit, I'll do a VIP nice. Edit.
There you go.
You know, it's definitely something that I'm always like, I have gotten a lot better at it. But when I first, like, you know, came to the States, like I was still figuring out who I was as an artist a lot, because Frontlines blew up so much. And then I had, I did the song with Sam Ghost and that also blew up, which I've been so lucky because like people obviously like really fuck with me, but it was hard for me to find my voice because, you know, I put out a song called Bodies and it was slow. And then I put out a dance song and I was like, ah, and then I took a beat for a second and I was like, okay, what are we doing? And then I was like, this is what I want to do. And since, you know, I didn't release any music for like a year and a half, maybe, because I was like, let's be smart and not just release to stay relevant. Let's release good music.
Which is great.
And then I put out Tear You Apart and I put out Loving You Kills Me. And they're all flowing in that same lane. And, you know, I'm dropping an EP next year and it's all in that same lane and it's exciting. Oh,
that's really fantastic. So when Frontlines dropped and everything kind of went crazy, did you move to the U.S. like shortly thereafter? How long have you been in the U.S.?
I've been in the U.S. for 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So and Frontlines came out five years ago. So pretty much.
What was that like? I mean, that's a crazy transition, life transition, like moving across the world, but also then having a career transition of all of a sudden kind of being on another level as an artist.
I'm just like, what am I doing? And that's why, you know, it was important for me, especially during COVID, to like, I just stopped and I was like, okay, take time, figure it out. And I really like, I was in the studio every single day and I wrote close to 300 songs. And I was just like, okay, pick the ones that you love and what you think you're defining your sound with. And everything has just been, you know, my team's super happy because I'm a complete, I overwork all the time. Like I'm a psychopath. I live, breathe, eat this shit. Like I don't do anything.
Is it hard for you to take vacations?
I don't take vacations.
Yeah, there you go.
If I do take vacations, I'm taking my laptop and my guitar.
Yeah, I feel you.
I mean, I'm going home to Australia to see my family finally, but like in saying that, like I have a script to work on. So I'm like,
yeah,
I think like when you're obsessed with what you do, it doesn't feel like work.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and of course, anytime you're your own boss and the success of what you're doing relies solely on, you know, your output, it's stressful sometimes to not work. Right.
You gotta work hard. Like if you want to, you know, like if you want to make a mark in this world, like no one's going to hand it to you. You have to work hard. You have to be really good at what you do and you have to love it.
What was the early experience for you in the U.S.? Had you been here before? Because I know you've done a lot of travel and been a lot of places. What was the first time in the U.S. like for you?
I actually came to the U.S. when I was like 18. And I actually was dating one of the Bloody Beirut's back in the day. And I didn't know he was a DJ. And I met him at a nightclub. Back when Steve Aoki used to do Dim Mac, with those Dim Mac parties.
Yeah, Dim Mac Sundays and Tuesdays out in LA, yeah.
It was a Tuesday one. And he was like, oh, like, you know, we got talking and whatever. And he's like, oh, do you want to come to a music festival with me? And I was like, okay. And he's like, we're leaving tomorrow. Like, I'll pick you up from your house. And I was like, where is it? And he's like, it's in Palm Springs. And I was like, okay. And I was like, can I bring a friend? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. So I go down, he picks me up in the morning and we drive down to Coachella.
Right. A music festival. Yeah.
I was like, what's the music festival called? And he's like, Coachella. And I was like, oh, sick. And then I was like, wait, you're the DJ. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, and then I realized, I was like, oh my God, wait, what? I was so like oblivious to everything. Cause I was just like, oh, he's so nice and sweet. Like, you know, I really fell for him in the way of like, rather than like who he was or what he was doing with his life. I was like, oh, he's such a humble, like cutie pie. Right. And you know, we're still like, you know, I'm doing a song with Bob, who's like now the Bloody Beirut. Right. But me and Tommy, who I dated, we still talk like 12 years later. Yeah,
amazing. That's such a cool connection. That's a very fun first time in the US story.
Yeah, and then he was like, you know, move to Italy and hang out with me. And I was like, okay. So I went and stayed with him in Italy for like, as you can see, I just do whatever feels good in my life. Like if someone's like, you should do this, I'm like, all right.
Let's do it, yeah.
And then I stayed with him like for a little bit around Europe, and that was so cool. And then I came back and I was like, all right, cool. Like I'm going to be a DJ. Mm. This is it.
Do you think all the travel and beyond just the travel, but you know, you've toured the world as well. How has that affected you either as a DJ or as a songwriter or a performer, like getting to go to a lot of different places, see a lot of different people and culture and reaction?
I'm Australian. So like, we're far. So I love traveling. Traveling's been ingrained in me since I was a kid. You know, my family always travels. My dad's South African, my mom's German. So it's like, you know, I traveled a lot when I was a kid. I'm like a Taylor Swift writer. Like everything that happens in my life, best believe, like you are going to hear about it. So I always, like, whenever I'm dating people, I'm like, I warn you, like, you might not like some things that I'm going to say, but this is what comes with dating me. And they're like, okay, yeah, I can handle that. And you know, it's so funny because like I was with my ex-boyfriend for like 3 years and I wrote so many beautiful songs about him. Even when we broke up, I wrote so many beautiful songs, you know? So I just take whatever is in my life and I just write about it because that for me is like, you know, some people go to therapy, I write.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's a good use of those experiences. That's a good way to make therapy work for you, right? Can I ask you a couple questions from, there's been a few people watching while we're talking. Who have questions for you. Zach from Seattle. Shout out to Zach. This is a good question. How do EDM and metal crowds differ in your opinion? You know, you're a fan of both. You go to both kind of shows. Like, and he's asking, like, is there differences between like the way people are in mosh pits and rowdiness and energy and community, that kind of thing?
Mosh pits and metal shows are way more playful to me.
I agree.
Mosh pits at dubstep shows, rah, everyone's like, metal shows like at Slipknot, like everyone was like, you know, everyone was moshing, but like it was really playful. But like the crowd in itself, like people don't really dance at metal shows. They kind of just like, you know, whereas at EDM raves, like everyone is dancing their asses off. So it's just a totally different vibe. And also like, you know, going down to outfits, you're at a metal show, you're wearing a Slipknot t-shirt, you're in baggy pants. Like at a rave show, you're wearing like pretty much nothing.
it's like, a little different. Yeah. A little more skin contact. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. I think, the metal culture, the moshing, you know, which is like the hardcore punk culture too, that came out of a community, like to bring it back to community again. And that is one thing where I'm like, I don't know if EDM got that message that, you know.
It's nice. It's soft. It's sweet. Everyone's there to like vibe. And it's like, it's just, people think that going to metal shows are aggressive, but I'm like, they're only as aggressive as you want them to be.
But yeah, that's a good way to put it. Absolutely.
You know?
And Zach is also asking, Zach's doing my work for me because I was going to ask you this too. Zach saw you with Cray doing the Bad Boys Club at Hard Summer. And yeah. He wanted to know future plans for that, how that came about. And I just had Cray on the podcast like a month ago, and I love her.
Oh,
and,
I love Jenny. Yeah. She's my bitch.
She's great.
We are both taking a slight beat from that because she has a project that she's working on really intensely, and I have my music career, and I have three other projects that I'm working on. And for both of us, it was just a little bit too much.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I loved that set. I saw that set and it was super fun. I wanted to talk to you about this actually, because you were talking about, you know, you end your sets with like a big pop song, and the Bad Boys Club set, you guys, you could just see how much fun you were having up on stage.
Yeah, but we're friends. That's why,
yeah,
you know,
100%. Like, but to me, like the songs you were playing and, you know, and playing these big pop songs, I think in EDM, there's almost a trope, like when a big DJ, you know, plays like Whitney Houston or something in the middle of their set, a lot of times to me, it almost feels like a meme, like a joke. Whereas I see you play songs like that, it feels very authentic of like, no, this is fun. And I like this song in a non-ironic. Yeah, like, I don't know. To me, there's something about, maybe it goes back to like the community of the old Bloghouse days, the weekly club kind of thing. Like I find with a lot of your music and your performances, there's like a lack of irony. And I like that. Like, it's just like, no, this is actually fun, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I play like Vanessa Carlton sometimes in my sets because that song it's slap. Like, you know, like I'm not playing it to be like, oh, this is a funny part. I'm like, no, this song fucks. It's really good.
Exactly.
You should listen to it.
Exactly.
You know?
And I think part of that, that's DJ brain too. That I think part of that is probably from your many years of DJing when nobody knew who
reading
you were.
Crowds. Reading a crowd. I used to like, I mean, I'm so good at it. I've done it. Like, you know, I did the back work really aggressively. You know, I would do 4 to 5 AM slots at clubs when everyone was so fucked up, and you would be like, okay, like this is what I have to play to keep them dancing.
Yep. Yep. Or the opening slot, right? When there's 10 people there.
No one's dancing.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, cool. How do I make them dance?
Yeah. That kind of experience is invaluable, I think.
Yeah, you actually learn how to read crowds, which is so important. You know, like sometimes in my sets, like I'm playing stuff and I'm like, no one's dancing. And then I'm like, hold on a second. And then I'll play something and I'm like, there they go.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think it's funny, but a lot of younger performers, even ones who are on big stages, you can tell sometimes don't have that part figured out yet, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they just haven't done the legwork, you know? It comes back to like, really grinding. Yeah. And I've been grinding and I will continue to grind, you know?
100%. I love that. All right. This is the last audience question. Damien from Salt Lake. We kind of talked about this a little bit, but he wonders, what was your first big step forward into the music industry or the moment when you were like, okay, I can actually do this?
I think there was the two, like there's the Rita Ora moment and then there's the Frontlines moment. And like my first show in America was Red Rocks.
That's insane. Wow. Was that exciting? Was that scary? What was that like?
Yeah. No, I don't get nervous. I don't get scared. I don't have, like, I get nervous if I see like a cute boy or a cute girl and I'm like, I want to talk to them. I don't know how to talk to them. Oh my God, what do I say? But like when it comes to myself and like what I do, I don't get nervous ever. But it was really beautiful. I had a friend pass away when I was young, my best friend. And I wrote a song, about him and I played it at the end and I got a double rainbow. And since I've played Red Rocks 4 times, I get double rainbows at the end of every single set.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. That's, do you make any, what do you make of that?
He's there. He's watching. He knows. It's really special. And I always end up crying because I'm like, oh my God, there it is.
Yeah. I mean, that's,
you know, I'll have a little moment backstage by myself and I'll just, you know, talk to him a little bit and just be like, thank you.
That's so beautiful. Would you consider yourself a spiritual person in general?
honey, I'm a witch.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're all about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been practicing witchcraft for like 7 years.
Really? Like for real?
For real.
Wow. Okay. I don't even know what question to ask about that, but how did you get into it, I guess?
My mom is big in like the medium, like she loves like she loves talking to like medium readers and things like that. And then I used to have a lot of trouble when I was a kid sleeping. So I went and saw a sleep therapist and they taught me how to lucid dream. And then that I just figured like the ways to open up different portals. And then it just ended up being, you know, I just fell in love with witchcraft and, you know, I do light stuff, nothing dark, nothing crazy.
What does that mean? I mean, if you don't mind talking about it, I'm just so curious, like what is light witchcraft consist of?
Like, a lot of like meditation and like, you know, protection and using crystals and using energy and, you know, manifestations, nothing like no hexing, no, none of that trash. Right. Like, you know, just using like energy and positivity and like, you know, calling to your spirit guide, your higher self.
It's so fascinating. I feel like we could do a whole nother podcast just about which I have so many questions, but I won't subject you to all of it. That's really
everyone that I'm around. I'm like there. I can see it. Like Ember's now into it too.
Oh, nice. You're converting. You're building a.
Oh yeah, it's gorgeous. Witchcraft is beautiful.
Building a coven is. Do people still?
Oh yeah,
use
we got
that?
A coven. Yeah, nice.
That's amazing. Well, you were talking about how songwriting fuel for you is your life experiences and places you go, people you meet, all that. What was it like during the pandemic when I feel like that fuel wasn't really there so much and you're at home a lot?
I went through a breakup.
Oh, well, that'll fuel a lot.
Yeah. So that was, and you know, he was like, we were together for 3 years. So that was like, that was a big one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fuel, you know, for a while.
That definitely gave me a lot to write about. Mm. It was really sad to not play shows, but I am grateful because it gave me a lot of time to figure a lot of shit out. You know, I feel like it was a big self-check. And it's like, you know, if I use the time that I was given really wisely.
What changed? Are you approaching any part of your career differently now?
Just the music. This is my favorite I've ever met. Like, this is the favorite stuff I've ever been making. And, you know, everyone that I show it to, they're like, whoa. And that's a really good feeling. And everything that I've been writing has been connecting. And like that for me, like I always, because I think I came over to the US and I started touring immediately. I didn't really have time to figure that out. Like Frontlines happened. And then it was like, boom, 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 boom. And I was so stressed out about putting out music because I wanted to have a follow-up. That like everything when I was putting it out, I was like, I don't know. I don't know. And that feeling is horrible. And now I'm like, this is me.
That's such a powerful feeling. It's such a good, like, it's just to have that bedrock of, if nothing else, you know who you are as an artist. That's
yeah. And that's kind of what I ride by. I'm just like, I'm not doing this to prove that I'm anyone or, you know, to make people like me. I'm doing it because this is what I like.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, that's cool. I don't care. And if you know, I show it to 1,000 people and 3 like it, that's all.
Yeah,
I
mean. Well, I love that. And I hope anybody listening, anybody who's trying to do anything creatively hears that, because that's that at the end of the day, that's the only real truth, right? It's like,
yeah, don't ever put out shit you don't like. Trust me, it does not feel good. Yep. It does not feel good.
Yeah.
You have to listen to it forever.
Yeah, you will. Stop. You will. Even worse, it might blow up and then you really are stuck with it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm grateful that I've never really had that happen, but yeah.
Exactly. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me. Before I ask you the last question, is there anything we didn't talk about? Anything else you want to get out there? Anything you want to let people know?
No.
Great.
Just keep watching. Just keep watching. You'll see it. You'll see it.
Love that. Love that. All right. So this is the question I ask at the end of each one of these interviews. It's a real simple question, kind of the first thing that pops into your head kind of question. Just looking for a moment in your life, a memory from any time, could be from when you were a kid, 5 minutes ago, any time, when in a single moment, music really deeply affected you, really had a deep impact on you in that moment. And that's meant to be a super broad question. There's no wrong answer.
I think when I was listening to Nirvana, Something in the Way in my car, and I was like 22, and I was just like bawling my eyes out, and it just struck a nerve, and I was just like, holy fuck. And I feel like music is my love language. It's like, if I am trying to tell someone how I'm feeling, I'm not very good. Like, I'm good at communicating, but like, I'm like, you don't understand. I'll send them a song and I'll be like, listen to this. And for me, that's like how I, like, you know, my exes are always like, cool, here's another Gigi catalog of how she's feeling.
That's so funny. Well, and that's a beautiful moment though, hearing the Nirvana song and connecting to something that deeply and realizing that, because I relate to what you're saying, like realizing that you can connect to something that deeply and that a piece of music can sort of put, you know, jumbled thoughts together in your brain and connect these feelings. That's a beautiful moment.
And I think that was like also the moment that I realized, like, you know, with songwriting and singing and all that stuff, like, I want to make people like, you know, when I'm singing, like, you know, what if I'm singing about a heartbreak or if I'm singing about fucking someone or whatever it is, like, I know that if I felt it, a million other people have felt it too, you know? And it's just like, it just creates like that safe space to be like, you're not alone. Everyone has been through something similar or something that you can like latch onto with this.
I love that. That's a great way to end it. Thank you so much for taking the time. I really enjoyed this. I hope you had a good time.
Did.
Have a great rest of your day. I appreciate it. All right.
Okay, bye.